You're with the best of the drawing room. Waleed Ali here for RN Drive on this Queen's birthday. I hope you've had a great long weekend. You can find details, incidentally, and the audio of tonight's show on the RN website under RN Drive. A bit more blues coming up a bit later. But first, we'll do something else. We'll talk to a couple of twitchers. Sean Dooley once broke the Australian record for spotting the most species of birds in one year. And then most recently, he's written the foreword to the reissue of a classic bird-watching book called Mateship with Birds. That book was by A.H. Chisholm. Sean Dooley's written the foreword to the new edition. He's also the editor of a wonderfully, handsomely presented magazine called Australian Bird Life. He joins me in the drawing room, along with Michael Veitch, actor, comedian, author, and he is also an avid bird watcher. Thank you very much for joining me in the drawing room, gentlemen.
Thank you. Pleasure. I love the view out the window.
It is good, isn't it?
I'm keeping one eye out for the birds.
Yes, good. Good.
He always does. Can I just say, you cannot go anywhere with him without him subtly taking out the little pad and just noting. He's an obsessive list keeper, as a lot of bird watchers are. Weekly lists, daily lists of just birds that they see.
Okay, so did you, Michael, as a bird lover, did you start with loving lists and then graduate to bird watching?
Well, that's a good point, because I think a lot of bird watchers are actually simply obsessive compulsives. Sorry, Sean.
It's just a way to channel the disorder.
Yes,
but I'm a late comer to this wonderful hobby, and I kind of inherited it through my son. But Sean goes way, way back before that.
How far back, Sean?
To the age of 10. I'll blame it all on a swamp. I grew up on the edge of Melbourne.
There's no affliction that can't be blamed on a swamp.
Yes. Malaria, twitchitis.
Don't go near the swamp, yes, son.
It was right. A bit like that. It was the ruination of me. Seaford North Primary School down near Frankston in Victoria was on the edge of Seaford Swamp, which is now one of the few urban wetlands around the world to be recognised as an wetland of international significance. And every day at lunchtime, looking out at all the birds that landed in the swamp, I was intrigued. And then we had a teacher in grade five who, this was back in the days of corporal punishment, or so the teacher told us.
Yeah. And, that was the excuse.
And I was so fearful of this teacher. He was one of the few male teachers in the school. And
oh,
he had a reputation for wielding the strap with vigour and glee.
Them's all the days.
Yes. And I remember going into grade five thinking, okay, this guy likes birds. If I like birds, he might go easy on me.
Really?
Not realising that, you know, I never got into trouble at school because I was the kind of kid who liked birds.
So all of this happened. Yes, exactly.
And so in my brain, I thought, okay, I've fished out a couple of books that an old great aunt had given me, some old Gould League bird books, and spent the 2 weeks before school madly rushing about the park across the road from where I lived trying to identify the birds. Within that two-week period, I was hooked, and the teacher, he turned out to be quite inspirational, took a lot of the kids camping, and we'd go bird banding, tagging them or ringing them for scientific research, and it all started from there.
And it all started as a matter of survival, really.
Out of desperation.
Were you worried that your son would give you the strap, Michael? Is that how?
Yes, things you inherit by reverse. My son at seven was into native orchids, Australian native orchids, and then birds. Is eccentric.
So how old was he when he converted you to the cause?
Oh, seven or eight.
Wow.
They were eccentric kids. I've got twins. You should see them at 22 now.
They're really eccentric.
They're made. My sons are the sort of people that I would consider walking across the street to avoid. They're mad. They're completely mad. Brilliant, brilliant, but mad. But
and
Thomas
also devilishly handsome, I have to say.
Yeah. I'll give them that.
I don't know. Their mum must be so attractive.
Well, their father's mad, so I guess you take a bit from everyone, don't you?
It's true, though. It was a hobby that my son Thomas absolutely took to as a small child. He abandoned it in adolescent years, as they do, but he's come back to it now. He's into all sorts of other sort of odd things, and I've stayed back in his sort of bird period. He said, "Dad, are you still with
Arrested Development?"
I've moved on, and now I absolutely love it.
Are you kind of glad you didn't come to it really young? That you didn't spend your adolescence and your youth watching birds?
I do regret it, actually, because now I've become list obsessed, as a lot of bird watchers are, and my life list would be so much better if I had started early. And the life list is the kind of holy grail of every birder and the rare birds that you have on your life list. Yes. Sean's life list is massive.
Well, you would have to be because you broke a record. Now, actually, I should clarify that. Australian record or world record?
Australian record.
Australian record.
So the world record for birds in Australia.
That's true.
Which I feel I'm here under false pretenses because it was actually, after holding it for 10 years, it was actually broken last year.
Doesn't matter.
By an interloper who managed to get
Well, then you still hold some kind of Australian record.
Yes.
So for the non-interloper bird watcher.
Yeah, that's true. Non-interloper bird watcher category, brackets.
What's the rarest bird on that list? What's the one, the crippler? That's a birding term for getting a really good bird.
I will need a glossary.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You need a glossary.
A glossary, as I put in the big twitch.
So the bird that you're most proud of that you didn't think you were going to get, but you got it.
Well, in a way, the most memorable was a bird with an obscure name, as a lot of these birds are, an Isabelline wheatear, which is a kind of dun brown bird, used to hanging out in the dry fields of the steppes of southern Russia where it breeds and then migrating to East Africa. And this one took a wrong turn at Hyderabad. The previous closest it had come to Australia was one record from Burma in 1980. And this bird managed to overshoot India, Burma, Indonesia, northwest Australia and land in a field in a place called Mount Carbine, which is a couple hundred k's north of Cairns, where it happened to be a clapped out paddock, overgrazed paddock with lots of cowpats in it, and that happily lived there for a few days.
Was it the only one of its species in the country?
Yeah, only one ever.
And that's so impressive that you've managed to spot the only one in the whole country.
Well, I didn't actually spot this one. I was in Broome at the time on another twitch. The twitch part of twitching is when you fly off or drive off when one of these rare birds turns up, usually from Asia, but sometimes from the Americas. They blow in cyclones or just follow a ship and can't get back to shore. And I had just raced, I think I'd travelled 40 hours driving to Broome for another first record for Australia of a beautiful bird called a blue and white flycatcher when I heard about the wheatear. So I had to work out how to get to Broome to north of Cairns as quickly as possible. So it involved driving to the, I think it's the Curtin Air Base where there was the an asylum seeker detention camp there, and the Broome Airport had the tarmac redone. So I had to drive to Derby, catch a plane to Kununurra, then another one to Darwin, then overnight to Cairns and hire a car, drive up, see this boring, boring bird, in like dull brown bird in a field of drying cowpats, and then catch a plane back to somehow get back to the detention centre and convince them that, no, yeah, that's my car, I left it there.
So I've just been to see a man about a bird. So, Michael, the question that emerges from this is, would you cross the road to avoid Sean, given the level of insanity that must be required to undertake?
I've always known how mad he actually is. So it doesn't surprise me, that story. My rarest bird is, and it kind of involves Sean because I didn't know how rare it was, it's a bird called a grey honey eater. Mm. I'm often texting Sean, and he is notoriously, notoriously bad text reply. He takes days to get back to you.
Well, he's busy. He's traversing the country.
I was at the Rosa Pink Gardens in Alice Springs, a lovely little kind of area just across the Todd River Bridge, and you turn left.
Olive Pink.
I'm sorry. Olive Pink. There you go. See, the Olive Pink. He's always correcting me too, but I don't mind.
Attention to detail. It's very important.
Olive Pink Gardens. And in an enormous camellia tree one morning, just before I was flying out, I saw a small grey honey eater type bird and looked it up. Oh, grey honey eater. It has to be, absolutely certain. Texted Sean. I knew it was rare because he texted back immediately, within seconds.
Wow.
And then I looked it up again, and it's a rare bird, indeed a rare bird, and it's the rarest bird that I have got.
How do Twitchers communicate now? Is it via, do you take photos and send it and then try to get information that way?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, the Twitchers grapevine sort of predated the internet in terms of information dissemination at rapid pace. But
how did you do it back then?
Well, I guess it was all telephone trees and things like that. But in the days, like the days of Chisholm, he sort of birded between sort of 1910 to the 1970s.
He birded.
Birded.
That's another one for the glossary.
It's a noun and a verb.
Yes.
And birds could be seen and wouldn't be known about often for decades because one collector would collect it for, say, the Museum of WA, and and it wouldn't be till another researcher happened to be looking at that collection 30 years later that, oh, that's already occurred here.
Oh,
but,
I see.
But today, the twitching community, that there are bird lines that you can send a sighting to, and they're up within a few hours online.
Online.
And do you tweet, Sean?
I do. I mm-hmm. do tweet. And I'm not out in the field as much these days. I have, unfortunately, well, fortunately, but I have responsibilities such as small children.
Oh, they get in the way, don't they?
A mortgage and a real job as editor of Australian
and,
Bird
and Life, a wife so. You haven't mentioned, who I'm sure yes. has a very interesting attitude to you driving to detention centres and catching planes across the country.
Yes. Well, she, my beautiful wife, Eleanor,
she must be in real trouble bird. If he has to
yeah,
say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He is so in the doghouse.
Yeah, exactly.
And as Michael said, I'm a details man, and that's a very important detail. My wife is very beautiful.
Oh, okay.
But she is not of the birding persuasion.
she can't stand this, can she?
No, and I thought I blew it the first time that I met her, because I went to a function, she was there. I thought, who is that woman? She's talking to somebody I know. And I walked up attempting my best sort of swagger, and I was introduced, oh, Eleanor, this is the Birdman.
Oh, like, no.
Damn. So I had to do a lot of groundwork.
There's nothing sexier than being the Birdman.
Yes.
Sean Dooley is the voice that you heard there. He's the author of The Big Twitch. He's also written the foreword to A.H. Chisholm's classic Mateship with Birds. He's written the new foreword, not at the time of A.H. Chisholm. He wasn't around that long. Michael Veitch joins us as well, comedian, author, actor, broadcaster with the ABC, and also fellow Twitcher. It's bizarre, frankly, hearing you talk about this with the passion that you do. I'm going to admit that up front. When I was thinking about this interview, I could not understand the obsession that you both clearly have. It's very genuine, no doubt about that. I don't doubt that once you have it, it's all very interesting. And this boring bird in the middle of a paddock on the other side of the country, you simply must go and see, even though it's self-avowed.
Join the conspiracy, Waleed.
What is
Join
it?
The conspiracy.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine that I could. Is this something that anyone can get into if they just get the right exposure? Or is it, do you have
I
to be a
have
kind
to
of
have,
person?
I think you have to have a curiosity. I think you have to have a desire to feel more of a purpose in something like nature than other just walking through it. Like I've always loved the bush. I've always loved walking through bush. I've loved bush walking. When I was living in Tasmania, I loved being in the open. It's very easy to do down in Tasmania. But I think it's a way of feeling more connected to something.
But there are lots of animals you could choose. There must be something special
and
about
trees.
Them.
And trees. And I'm starting to actually bring my eucalypt field guide with me, just so I can know what kind of tree is that. And long before I actually started bird watching, but I was in the Williamstown Gardens 15 years ago, and there, at dusk there was a very unusual tan bird, and I remember thinking, I wish I knew what that was. I wish I could tell the name. Now I know it's a rufous night heron, a common bird that comes out at dusk and roosts in the day.
But why did you need to know that?
That I can't explain. That's part of the kind of seeking to feel comes some kind of more connection rather than just being an observer.
See, for me,
it gets into territory that's actually hard to actually.
It's interesting. For me, it's cats, and I don't mean little cats. Like, if I have to select an animal that I'm going to be interested in,
big cats.
Yeah, it's the like it's tigers, it's
pumas,
lions. But I can tell you why I think, and it's because I'm impressed by the power. I'm impressed by the inherent majesty, the efficiency of movement, the fact that a tiger sleeps 18 hours a day or something ridiculous, but could end my life within about a third of a second.
But you can't see your big cats except... Yeah. I mean,
well, no,
that's
I go to a zoo or something. But at least there I can articulate what it is about this class of animals that excites me. What is it about birds that's exciting?
Well, I think your answer there, what Michael was saying, that the one thing is birds are that piece of nature that is before our eyes wherever we are. It's very hard if you're into mammals to go and see them. I mean, even though there's supposedly a rat within 10 metres of where we live in the cities at any given time. But most mammals are small and nocturnal and you don't see, and the large ones are few and far between. Birds give you that little nugget of nature constantly wherever you are. But I think, and there are two aspects. One is the aesthetic appeal and the fact that they come in an almost infinite array of colours and that they sing with a multitude of voices. And I think this is what's really important for the human psyche is that they fly. The majority of birds fly. And I think that holds a particular fascination.
Well, do you have a hierarchy then? Not into chickens. Chickens don't count.
Well, the good thing about twitching is that it's very democratic. A wild chicken counts the same as a night parrot. They're all one. They're all
even
one
though it doesn't fly.
Actually, wild chickens do fly.
Oh, do they?
They just choose not to.
That's even better.
See, now, over the next couple of years, I'm actually developing a one-man stage version of a couple of books I've written about another obsession of mine, which is the aircraft and the men who flew them during the Second World War.
You just like the sky, don't you?
I kind of do. But knowing that I'm going to be touring Australia over the next few years with this show, I'm already thinking, wow, all the places I can go to that I haven't been to, that I'll be able to see birds that I've never seen before. Mm. You know, black grass wren, if I get to where? It's in northern
Kimberley.
In the Kimberleys, if I get there.
So you're saying that when I save up my pennies and book a holiday to go to Rome, I'm thinking of the Colosseum. You're not the least bit interested in the Colosseum. You're most more interested.
These are not mutually exclusive. Yeah, it's a question of priority.
The birds of the Colosseum.
Yes, I went bird watching at the not the Colosseum, but the Forum. I saw a lifer there. I saw a Sardinian warbler in the bushes. Right next to the ruins.
I've never had a conversation like this with someone who's been to Rome and come back and reported on the wildlife.
It gives you, I find that it just enhances your experience of place. And I'm particularly, while it was great to see that Sardinian warbler, I'm particularly obsessed with Australian birds. And even though I've now seen most of them, all but a few, I still love going out. It's an anchor point and a reference point for me and a way to get into the landscape and understand the landscape.
And so for some people it's food, for some people it might be live performance, and for you it's wildlife. And a lot of people are into wildlife of a place, and some places lend themselves better to others. All right, just before we wrap up then, just quickly, what's the Holy Grail? If you get to see one more species in your entire
In Australia or
anywhere in your life?
This is both Australia and the world, the night parrot. It is the Holy Grail bird. It is a bird that virtually doesn't exist. It's got a cloak of invisibility. We know they exist because people collected them in the 19th century. And we found two dead ones in the last 20 years, but freshly dead, so we know they're out there. They live in the outback. Mm-hmm. We think during the day they live in burrows underneath spiky spinifex bush in the most remote parts of the outback. And they come out only at night, supposedly, and in the remotest areas. And they're probably being decimated by feral cats, so that's why there's so few around. But no birdwatcher has ever been able to show another birdwatcher or get a photograph of a live night parrot.
So it'll be like when they revealed the Higgs boson. If you get one, you'll be able to stand in front of a lecture theatre full of nerds.
Exactly. Imagine what a birdwatcher would have been like. In the last century before we did all the land clearing. Imagine just the number of species that you'd be able to access.
Well, that's the amazing thing about mateship with birds, the Chisholm book, as he was based in Queensland for a lot of his time, but he grew up in Victoria, in central Victoria. And the way he talks about the birds of central Victoria, it's like a paradise. Mm. And there are a number of birds there. Like he talks regularly about a bird called a regent honeyeater, which is a beautiful bird. He talks as if it's commonplace, still reveling in its beauty and his great language that he uses. But now the regent honeyeater is down to less than 500 birds across the country. And it just beggars belief at what Australia was like before we got it with an axe and the stump jump.
Yeah, it's amazing what you lose in the name of progress sometimes, isn't it? That book, incidentally, is called Mateship with Birds. There's a reissue. A.H. Chisholm wrote the original. The foreword to that reissue has been written by Sean Dooley, one of my guests in the drawing room. He's also the author of The Big Twitch and the editor of Australian Bird Life, which has a page in it that is devoted to the night parrot. Michael Veitch has opened it up industriously as we were talking about the night parrot. Looks just like a parrot to me, but there you go. I'm clearly not in the game. Michael Veitch, my other guest in the drawing room, comedian, author, actor, broadcaster, and clearly very big-time Twitcher. Thank you, gentlemen, both for coming in. It's been truly enlightening and all kinds of fun.
Thank you, Ali.
Thank you.